On va commencer avec Ketanjali Leena. Ketanjali est un membre, un avocat avec le Conseil canadien des réfugiés ici à Montréal. Et aussi un militant dans la communauté Sri Lankan dans la ville de Montréal.
My name is Ketanjali. Actually, I'm not a lawyer. I wrote down advocate, not avocat. But I do my best. I want to start off by just telling you what my understanding and premise is for what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to look at the C-11, which is the changes to the new Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, and compare that with C-36, which is the new Anti-Terrorism Act, or bill. And I'm also going to mention a deal that's being negotiated right now, which is called the Safe Third Country Agreement between Canada and the United States. So hopefully I can try and make those three different pieces of proposed legislation or legislation make some sense to you. And to start off, the way I see these three pieces interacting is, and how I believe that we should look at them is that since C-36 has been proposed, there has been a lot of discussion over the loss of civil liberties for Canadian citizens. And my perspective is that all of these aspects or ways that Canadian citizens may lose civil liberties or may suffer a lack of freedom or loss of freedom, those have always been in effect under the Immigration Act for non-citizens. So the same ways that people are now very excited that citizens may lose civil liberties has always been in place for immigrants under the Immigration Act, and even more so for refugees under the Immigration Act. So I think it's important to not just focus on what may happen to citizens now as a result of C-36, but what C-36 has borrowed from the Immigration Act, and how immigrants have always been have always had a less civil liberties and protection under the Constitution and the Charter than citizens have. And that should be the way that we understand this. And also with C-36, it is primarily, hopefully this will become clear as I explain the legislation, it will be primarily people of color, immigrants, refugees, who will feel the brunt of the new anti-terrorism legislation. So there is a bill called C-11, and it's sweeping changes to the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, and it became law just in December of last year. It will be implemented, they are hoping, by June 28th. So in between now and then, there's this huge discussion of this massive document of regulations, and they do this tricky thing where they pass in the House of Commons an act that has some of the stuff, but then half, the majority of the other ways that the bill will affect immigrants and refugees is not discussed in Parliament, is not open to the public for discussion, but is passed through these regulations that not many people have access to see. The Canadian Council for Refugees, where I work, we happen to be in a privileged position of negotiating with the government on these regulations. So I'm going to try and explain some of these things to you so that you understand how C-11 already has already framed immigrants and refugees as a threat to national security. And what C-36 does is extend those to Canadian citizens as well, and then broaden the terms a lot more. So one of the points that has come out in the regulations on C-11 is that they seem to feel like it's okay to detain minors, which is like people under 18. So detention of children has already been happening in detention centers in Montreal, Toronto, and in Vancouver as well. And this is something that we've always opposed, but this new law, this new act, is not going to, on the contrary, has not removed the desire to, or the ability of the government to place minors in detention. And basically they're saying that if there's adequate detention facilities and services, that minors can be detained. And furthermore, they've also suggested that in the regulations that minors could be, like children, could be detained if they're have been suspected of being controlled by smugglers or traffickers. Because one way that people enter the country illegally is because the legal avenues for entering the country are so difficult and so strict and so racist that a lot of people come in illegally. And so people get smuggled and trafficked into Canada, and we oppose any kind of detention of minors, but especially the idea of detaining minors to protect them from people smugglers and traffickers is pretty stupid. So we suggested that at least they should find safe houses that young people should be put in. Another point, and this is a fairly large one, is the permanent residence card. And this is supposed to cost $287 million over the next 5 years to introduce this tamper-proof ID card. And it's being marketed as, it's being marketed as a travel document, not an ID card. But if it's something that all permanent residents are supposed to have, then it becomes de facto like an ID card. So one of the things that we're worried about is because the process of applying for this card is so ridiculously time-consuming and also very, very invasive, I'm going to explain that people, like young people who can't afford to get the card, people who have people with disabilities who have like less mobility than able people may not get the card, older people may not get the card, and so they may be denied services because they don't have that card. So it is supposed to be a travel document. So basically it replaces a piece of paper that most permanent residents have right now that says that they're a permanent resident. You have to take this piece of paper with you every time you leave the country, and without that piece of paper, you can't get back into the country. So it's nice to have a plastic card, but one of the things about this card is that they want to put biometric information on it, which means like could be a fingerprint, could be a retina scan. None of this is on my passport, right? I don't have any of that information on my passport. So there's aspects of the way this permanent residence card is planned that implies that the government feels that immigrants are extremely suspicious because they're asking immigrants for way more information than they are asking for the average citizen who's applying for a passport. So what happens is if you become a permanent resident after June 28th, if you were a permanent resident before June 28th, or if you have to renew your card, the card's good for 5 years, you have to fill out this form that is crazy. It's like a million times more difficult than getting a passport. Besides having a guarantor, which everyone who wants a passport has to have a guarantor, you have to have the names and addresses and contact numbers of two Canadian citizens who will vouch for you. And you also have to supply several certified copies of this document and that document, which if anyone's ever tried to get these kind of things, you know it's difficult. And also you have to give them information on who you've worked for, where you've lived, and if you've been to school, where you've been to school for the last 5 years. None of that is ever required of Canadian citizens who are applying for a passport. So what are they trying to say? That that permanent residents are suspicious because they're not Canadian citizens, therefore the government has a right to ask them extremely intrusive information. And another point is that the case of Ahmed Ressam, who is an Algerian guy who was caught trying to smuggle explosives into the U.S., is always brought up as an example of how, you know, it's so easy to forge Canadian papers. Well, I mean, it's easy to forge any country's papers, really. And he got a passport using a baptismal certificate. He wasn't walking around with a permanent residence paper, you know? So at least if they're going to make it harder for permanent residents if they're going to make it so hard for permanent residents to get this card, the least they should do is make it hard for Canadian citizens to get a passport. So there's a real difference in the way they're treating citizens and non-citizens. And this is, you know, always been part of the way the Immigration Act is, obviously, but C-36 we see, oh God, 5 minutes. The point system is another thing that is part of C-11, and with the point system, basically the government is ripping off immigrants by upping the number of points that you're supposed to get from 70 points to 80 points, and it's really, the way they change the criteria really discriminates against working class people who have skills but the government doesn't think they have skills. So people whose files were in the system before these changes were made will not get their money back, and they paid at least $500, if not more, just to apply. So the government is saying, you applied, we changed the rules, we know that you'll no longer be able to come to Canada as an independent immigrant, but we're keeping your money. And what they've done is given them an extra 5 bonus points, which isn't really going to help anybody actually get in. So it's basically robbery. And if you know how much like $500 costs, like the equivalent of that in other countries, it's a lot more. So it's like taking, you know, maybe 6 months of somebody's salary or more. Some other points are, let me see. Well, I'm going to talk about the Safe Third Country Agreement since I have such a short number of minutes left. Basically, since September 11th, there has been a lot of cries from opposition and you know, all kinds of anti-immigrant, anti-refugee people to harmonize our immigration laws with those of the United States, which means like having the same visa requirements for like the same list of countries that the United States requires a visa for those people to enter their country, that Canada would also add all of those people onto our own list. And we actually already have added 5 new countries to the list of countries that require a visa, and that's predominantly countries where people of color come from, so you can't just buy a plane ticket and come here. The United States has, a safe third country basically means that anyone who comes to the US and then gets to the Canadian border and says, I want to make a refugee claim, would not be allowed into Canada just because they landed in the United States. So we say, you should make a claim in the US. Now, everybody knows that the United States has lower standards of refugee protection than Canada. They have different international agreements that they sign, so our systems are not equal. As bad as the Canadian, or as many flaws as the Canadian system may have, in some ways it's still a lot better than the United States. And a lot of people feel that refugees shouldn't have a choice as to where they make a claim. They call that asylum shopping, which I think is really, really unfair, because obviously there could be a lot of good reasons that someone might have for wanting to make the refugee claim in Canada as opposed to the United States. For example, you might have family here, or you might have contacts here, or your country might have been supported, an oppressive regime in your country might have been supported by the United States, and so you don't want to live there, you know? I mean, these are valid things that refugees should be able to take into consideration and decide if they want to make their claim in Canada. So it's really good for Canada because we're going to have a lot less refugee claimants coming, because I think it's 2/3 of the people who make claims in Canada enter via the United States. So the United States are not particularly gung-ho on the idea, because they're going to have a lot more people, because all of those people who like took a flight to the U.S. will have to stay there and make their claim. And you know, people are detained much more readily in the United States than they are in Canada. So I'm just going to, I really want to just mention this one point, okay? I want to give you an example of how genuine refugee claimants who have not committed any kind of breach of national security or have been involved in any kind of terrorist activity get caught under the nets of these broad and vague definitions of terrorism, membership in a terrorist group. For example, Nelson Mandela, if he applied to Canada to come as a refugee, he would be refused because the African National Congress, which we know to be a movement for a national liberation, is considered a terrorist group under our immigration laws. So there is no nuances that are really understood by the government that distinguish between an international terrorist network and a genuine movement that's fighting an oppressive regime. For example, like the Liberation Tamil Tigers of Elam. And there is a guy who recently got landed just in January, or sorry, in December, who was from Turkey, and he was a Kurd. And I don't know if you're aware of the Kurdish resistance in Turkey, but because he came and he applied as a refugee, and he got accepted as a refugee, but he was in limbo without getting his permanent residence status for almost 10 years. Just because he was a Kurd and he had been involved in the Kurdish community, and CSIS believed that he was doing some sort of terrorist activities. And this guy, like, They had no proof against him, and for 10 years he, you know, couldn't get a good job, couldn't sponsor any family to come here, couldn't move on with his life, couldn't get a student loan, couldn't leave the country, simply because he wasn't landed. And this is like a really good example of how if we don't have clear definitions of what it means to be a member of a terrorist organization or what it means to take part in a terrorist activity, a lot of innocent people are going to be caught under this net of suspicion. Okay, sorry, I have 1 minute. And there are watchdogs, there are watchdog groups that try to keep tabs on CSIS and this, you know, like for example, there's CERC, which is the Security and Intelligence Review Committee, and unfortunately they don't have much enforcement power, so even though they can say to CSIS, look, this person that you have a security certificate against who you won't, you're preventing him from getting landed, has done nothing. No matter how many people intervene, CERC can make recommendations, but they can't force CSIS and CIC to drop their allegations. So, and I mean, Sami is just an example of he's one of many refugees. Long before Bill C-36 came into place. So you can imagine now with Bill C-36, there's going to be even more people who are suspected of doing this and that, but probably haven't done anything.